Good morning. My name is Jake. If we have not met yet, I am one of the pastors here at Gateway Church, and I'm so happy to be with you this morning. Last week, we started our series called Free in the Book of Galatians. We're going to be studying through the entire book of Galatians from last week through the end of August. So it's going to be a several week series. And what we want to do with the series is course correct in a sense. Because the whole reason Paul wrote the book of Galatians is he was course correcting. Because a false gospel had infiltrated into the churches in Galatia, which is modern-day Turkey, and it started being this gospel that Jesus plus rules or Jesus plus laws or Jesus plus do's and don'ts is what set people free. And Paul's saying, no, that's not the gospel. That's a false gospel. It's Jesus plus nothing that sets people free. So Paul's course correcting, and there's incredible freedom in this truth of understanding that it's just Jesus that sets us free. That our salvation is not earned. It's not coming from rules or regulations or laws or this or that. It comes from the person of Jesus Christ. So that's what this series is focused on. It's Jesus that sets us free. And this morning, we're going to be continuing that series starting in verse 11. I want to give you a little bit of context. Last week, if you missed out on last week, Justin gave the context of why Galatians was being written. But he was also addressing in his verses 1 through 10 that people are accusing Paul of being a people pleaser. They're saying, Paul, listen, you're watering down the gospel so that you can get friends. You're saying that people don't have to do all this stuff just so that people will follow you and listen to your gospel. And Paul's saying, listen, if I wanted to people please, I would not be a follower of Jesus. I mean, there's probably a lot of us that know that to be true. If you're a follower of Jesus, there are some people that automatically don't like you. And then verse 11, there's also a rumor going around that Paul has plagiarized the gospel, that he's taken bits and pieces from the other apostles and other things and put them together to create his own gospel. So there's this rumor going around that one, that Paul is a people pleaser, and two, that he's a plagiarizer. And Paul isn't super thrilled right now, naturally, because people don't like being questioned about the validity of what they're saying. And so starting in verse 11, this is what Paul says. He says, I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that the gospel I preached is not of human origin. I did not receive it from any man, nor was I taught it. Rather, I received it by revelation from Jesus Christ. I'm going to stop there for a moment. See, here's the thing. Paul's saying, listen, I didn't get this from anybody. I got it straight from the source. If you don't know Paul's story, He wanted to destroy the church. In verse 13 and 14, which we'll read in a moment, he says, I wanted to destroy the church. And he says, I got this straight from the source. It was revealed to me by Jesus. This revelation I received was by Jesus Christ. And here's in the Greek, the noun for revelation that Paul uses is in the objective form. So what that means is when Jesus showed up, Jesus didn't present to him the gospel that he needed to preach. Jesus didn't reveal the gospel that he needed to preach. Jesus was the revelation for Paul. Jesus was the revelation. So Jesus wasn't handing stuff out on tablets. He didn't hand it out in gold tablets. He didn't hand it out on stone tablets. He was the revelation himself. And Paul's saying, listen, I didn't get this from anybody else. I saw Jesus. I encountered a truly resurrected Jesus. And if you're taking notes, this is your first fill-in. Jesus plus nothing produces transformation. Jesus plus nothing produces transformation. In other words, we are free to change. We're free to change. The revelation Paul received was Jesus. It was a person. It was just Jesus. And it's that encounter that led to this incredible transformation in Paul's life. Verse 13, for you have heard of my previous way of life in Judaism, how intensely I persecuted the church of God and tried to destroy it. I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my own age among my people and was extremely zealous for the traditions of my fathers. Paul's saying, listen, I wanted to destroy the church, and then I encountered Jesus. Something changed in me. Because here's the thing, only a true encounter with Jesus can move the church's number one adversary to its number one ambassador. Okay? People don't just shift from absolute hatred to absolute endorsement. You don't move from the number one enemy to the number one emissary without something radical happening. And it can't just be like, well, maybe he just had a change of heart. Paul was shipwrecked multiple times. He was arrested and beaten countless times. He was imprisoned. I mean, like, at some point, he'd probably be like, you know what? It was just a fad that I was going through. It was just a phase I was going through. No. I mean, like, his faith eventually led to his martyrdom. And you don't move from the enemy to the emissary without something radical happening inside. And it's only Jesus that can create that kind of transformation. And encountering Jesus, when it's just Jesus and nothing else, we're transformed. And Paul even echoes this in his letter to the church in Corinth when he says, if anyone is in Christ, he's a new creation. The old has gone, and the new is here. Paul he recognizes that this transformation only comes in Christ. And he says, listen, when you encounter Jesus and when you're transformed, your old life is gone. And you have a new one, a better one. You're transformed. We're free to change. We're free to be different than what we've ever been before. We can break chains in our lives because of Jesus. We can break generational cycles in our lives and our families, the stuff that lurks in the shadow of our lives and in our family lives, things like alcoholism, things like abuse, things like abandonment, things like greed, things of like performance-driven relationships where if you're not doing right, you're failing as my son or you're failing as my daughter. We can break those chains in us because Jesus allows us to change. He sets us free from those things. We can leave the baggage at the door because we can be different. Have you ever heard the saying from somebody that says, oh, they're just not the person they used to be? You know, oh, they've changed so much. Good. Life changes you. Right? And it's an absurd requirement to never change. That doesn't make any sense as humans. I am not the same person I was when my wife first married me because I was 23. How many of you are the same person you were at the age of 23? None of us. Because we learn, we change, we grow, we realize the mistakes we made, and we try to adopt, you know, to change them and adopt new behaviors. And quite honestly, I'm different because of what I've encountered through life and because of what Jesus has done in my life. I shouldn't be the same person I was 9, 10 years ago. I shouldn't be the same person I was 5 years ago, because if Jesus is constantly in my life and bringing transformation, I'm free to change. I'm free to break from the chains that I had 5 years ago. I'm free to break from the chains I had 5 days ago. Jesus plus nothing promotes transformation. There's a youth game, or games played oftentimes in youth groups, called Bigger or Better. The sole premise of the game is you're handed a pen. And so you go into a neighborhood and you knock on the door and you say, we're playing this game called Bigger or Better, and I just want to see if you'd be willing to trade this pen for something either bigger than this pen or better than this pen. And the goal is to see what kind of stuff you can get, right? What you can trade up to. There are stories. The one on the left is the guy who started off with an old broken flip phone and traded all the way up to a Porsche. traded up to a Porsche. Like, and it took him 2 years to do it, but he took an old flip phone and traded it in for a Porsche. The guy on the right started with a red paperclip, traded it in for a house. Just through the process of, hey, I'll trade you this paperclip to this and this and this. I mean, these are incredible stories of somebody taking something broken or useless or not without or without much value and getting something incredibly better. And that's what Jesus does in our life. He takes our old self and he gives us something new and something better. It's like moving from a Ford Pinto to a teleporter. Like, that's what it's like. Like, listen, hey, I know you're driving this Ford Pinto, and I love the duct tape on the seat. I've got this teleporter for you. Would you like to make a trade? Sure. And that's what Jesus does in our life. He completely transforms us from the inside, and we are free to change. We're free to be different. We're free from our bondage. We're free from our baggage, and we're free indeed. Let's keep reading. Verse 15. It says, "But when God, who set me apart from my mother's womb and called me by his grace, was pleased to reveal his son in me so that I might preach him among the Gentiles, my immediate response was not to consult any human being. I did not go up to Jerusalem to see those who were apostles before I was, but I went into Arabia. Later, I returned to Damascus." So Paul is still addressing this idea that he plagiarized the gospel. He's like, listen, when I first discovered Jesus and he first revealed himself to me, I didn't go see anybody else. I went to Arabia. I didn't go see the apostles. "Then after 3 years, I went to Jerusalem to get acquainted with Cephas and stayed with him 15 days. I saw none of the other apostles, only James, the Lord's brother. I assure you before God that what I am writing you is no lie. Then I went to Syria and Cilicia. I was personally unknown to the churches of Judea that are in Christ. They only heard the report, the man who formerly persecuted us is now preaching the faith he once tried to destroy. And they praised God because of me." Number two, if you're taking notes, Jesus plus nothing prompts testimony. In other words, we're free to share. Jesus plus nothing prompts testimony. See, freedom doesn't come by a formula. There is no formula for experiencing freedom. There are some of us in here, I'm one of them, that really likes things when they're linear, when they're formulaic, when they're predictable. I don't like a whole lot of unknown variables, right? I'm a very practical, very linear thinker. So the fact that freedom isn't a formula kind of bothers me a little bit, I'll be honest. But freedom isn't a formula. And sometimes maybe we wish it was, that maybe, just maybe we could take some medically prescribed drug that removes every anxiety that this world has to offer. Or that maybe we could recite some psychological incantation to make us feel better and to release all the tension in our lives. But we all know life isn't that simple. But we try and make it that simple. Even in our faith, some of us are even guilty of this, of treating Sunday mornings as a formula, treating your faith as a formula. You show up on a Sunday morning, you get your weekly dose of Jesus talk, and then you go out to the rest of your week completely unchanged. Like you're popping some kind of Jesus pill and thinking that's going to solve the problems. But freedom isn't a formula. It's a story. And it's a story that we work through all of its complexities, all of its ambiguities each day. And each day we encounter a new reality of that freedom. We encounter a new aspect of that freedom. It's a story that we just constantly work through. And when Paul talks about freedom that's revealed through Christ, the gospel, he doesn't give a formula. He tells a story. His story. He recounts being a Jew of a Jew, a Hebrew of a Hebrew, a Pharisee of a Pharisee. He says, I was the most overzealous to the point that I was head and shoulders above my peers in understanding the law. And he tells his story. And he does this on a number of occasions when he shares the gospel. His story is one of the most common vehicles he uses for sharing the gospel. There's a Japanese practice called kintsukuri, and it literally means to repair with gold. And it's the art of repairing pottery with gold and understanding that the piece is all the more beautiful for having been broken. That the brokenness in the repair is not, it's now part of the bowl's story. I mean, we break a piece of pottery and we throw it away. They break a piece of pottery and they add value to it. Because it's inlaid now with gold. The cracks are sealed with gold. So not only is the bowl more beautiful or the piece of pottery more beautiful, it's also more valuable, and it tells a story. Those repair lines, those scars, tell a story. And the result of that story is greater value and greater beauty. That's Jesus in our lives. That most people are ashamed of their brokenness, and Jesus says, let me work with that brokenness. Let me line it. Let me make you new. Let me make you different. You don't have to hide your brokenness. You can embrace your brokenness and embrace me at the same time. And you're going to encounter something incredible. And you're going to have an incredible story to share with others. You see, your story is a part of God's story. Your story is a part of God's story. You're not a last-minute intrusion on God's attention. And sometimes we act like that when we're praying, God, if you're not too busy. You're not a last-minute intrusion on God's attention. We're not something incidental to God's plan. We are not something that just happened along in the course of certain biological going-ons of the human race. We are, each of us, set apart. We are children of God. We're not resented accidents. You know, in the book of Jeremiah, God is calling Jeremiah to be a prophet, and he says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I set you apart. In the obvious context, he's talking to Jeremiah, and I set you apart as a prophet to the nations. And Paul even says, before God formed me and set me apart to preach to the Gentiles. But the same is true for us. Before you were formed in your mother's womb, God knew you and he had a story for you to tell. And he set you apart to be part of his story. He knew exactly what race you were going to be. He knew exactly what gender he was going to make you. And everything that you are is intentionally designed to be part of your story in relation to his story and the fact that the gospel brings transformation and freedom. There's so much intentionality in this. We're not just afterthoughts. And in all honesty, that story that we can tell is the best story to be told. And it's the story people need to hear. And when we share those stories, we can experience freedom and life and transformation together. Keep reading, start chapter 2, verse 1. It says, then after 14 years, so 17 years total, I went up again to Jerusalem, this time with Barnabas. I took Titus along also. I went in response to revelation and meeting privately with those esteemed as leaders, I presented to them the gospel that I preach among the Gentiles. I wanted to be sure I was not running and had not been running my race in vain. And then jump down to the latter part of verse 6. It says, they added nothing to my message. On the contrary, they recognized that I had been entrusted with the task of preaching the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been to the circumcised. For God, who was at work in Peter as an apostle to the circumcised, was also at work in me as an apostle to the Gentiles. If you're taking notes, number three, Jesus plus nothing promotes unity. In other words, we're free together. We're free together. So Paul talks about this idea. He's like, listen, after 17 years total, I finally went up to see the other apostles in Jerusalem. And I shared with them the gospel that I've been preaching. Why? For accountability. He wanted to make sure that his gospel matched up with their gospel. He wanted to make sure that they were sharing the same message, that there wasn't any confusion. And he says, they didn't have anything to add. Great, Paul. Nailing it. And he's like, in fact, we all recognize that I'm doing my thing with the Gentiles, and Peter's doing his thing with the Jews, and it's working. Because Jesus plus nothing promotes unity. You see, the problem is that we tend to add stuff to our Christianity. C.S. Lewis, who's one of the greatest Christian thinkers of the modern era, wrote a book called The Screwtape Letters. Have you guys ever read The Screwtape Letters? Fantastic book. The interesting notion about this book is that he writes it from the perspective of a demon. And really interesting mindset, but super powerful. And I want to share with you an excerpt out of this. And the premise of the book, if you have not read it, is that it's a series of letters from a senior demon named Screwtape to his nephew Wormwood, who's a junior tempter, right? Obviously, this is a fictional book, just so we're clear. The uncle's mentorship pertains to the nephew's responsibility in securing the damnation of a British man known only as the patient. In one of his letters to his nephew, Screwtape introduces the notion of Christianity and I'm gonna read this excerpt. C.S. Lewis writes this through the view of Screwtape. He says, the real trouble about the set your patient is living in is that it is merely Christian. They all have individual interests, of course, but the bond remains mere Christianity. What we want if men become Christians at all is to keep them in a state of mind I call Christianity and. You know, Christianity and the crisis, Christianity and the new psychology, Christianity and the new order, Christianity and faith healing, Christianity and psychical research, Christianity and vegetarianism, Christianity and spelling reform. If they must be, this was written in 1932, by the way. If they must be Christians, let them at least be Christians with a difference. Substitute for the faith itself some fashion with a Christian coloring. And to summarize, Screwtape is telling Wormwood, if they're going to become Christians, get them distracted with something else. Give them a flavor of Christianity to hold to. Give them Jesus and something. Give them Jesus and something else. And then, because Jesus plus something brings division. When we flavor our Christianity with our own preferences, with what we think church should be, with what we think Christianity should look like, what we think Christians should do, what we think Christians should do, whether we say things like, I can't believe you're a Christian if you voted for Donald Trump. And other people say, well, I can't believe you're a Christian if you didn't vote for Donald Trump. And all of a sudden, now my Christianity and your Christianity are at odds, and we've got a problem. Because when it's Jesus plus something, our focus is on the something and not on Jesus. And when it's Jesus plus nothing, that's it. We're only focused on him. And guess what? So is everybody else. When our Christianity isn't flavored with what we like and what we think and our opinions and is only focused on the person of Jesus Christ, there's only unity to be found because we're only ever focused on Jesus. I mean, like, it's so abundantly clear that sometimes the problem in the world with Christians is our own doing because we've flavored our Christianity with our own preferences and with what we think should be the case, instead of just focusing on Jesus. And so Paul says, they didn't have anything to add because I was preaching Jesus plus nothing and they were preaching Jesus plus nothing. We're on the same page. Two different types of people group. Different cultural contexts. Different this, different that, different methods, different stories. It doesn't matter because it all points to Jesus. And when it's Jesus plus something, we stop pointing people to Jesus and we start pointing people to ourselves. And we do not bring salvation. Jesus does. There are three questions, before I get to the three questions, there's a common saying in the church, and it says this. It says, in the essentials, unity. What's the essential? Jesus. In the non-essentials, liberty. What are the non-essentials? Everything else. But in all things, charity. In other words, in everything else, in every aspect of your life, grace, love. Focus on Jesus. There's freedom in everything else. But most of all, there should be love. Three questions for you this morning. Number one, how have you been changed by Jesus? How have you been changed? And just, this just to get you thinking, all right, take some time for introspection to say, man, how have I been changed? Whether you're a new believer, you're a new follower of Jesus, whether you were born in the baptism of the church, and you've been a Christian all your life, it doesn't matter. We've all encountered transformation and change because of who Jesus is. How have you been changed? The second question is, in light of how you've been changed, what's your story? What's your story? What's your story to share with others? Because if you've been changed by Jesus, you got a story to tell. And people wanted to hear your story. People need to hear your story. And the third question is, who can you encourage with your story? Because life is hard. We all go through these times where we don't get it. We're just at a loss. But somebody who has recognized that they've been changed by Jesus, that they have a story to share, can encourage others to encounter him as well, and to be changed, and to be set free. At Gateway, we exist to know God, to be transformed. We exist to grow together, to share our stories and to share life, and then to go and serve, to encourage one another, serve our community, and point them back to Jesus. That's why we're here, because Jesus plus nothing else is what sets people free. The world needs Jesus. It doesn't need more politics. It doesn't need more blogs and fads and policies and litigation. It doesn't even need revolution. It just needs Jesus. And how are people going to experience Jesus if we're not sharing our story? If we're not pointing people to say, listen, this is what my life was like before Jesus, and then I had a radical encounter with him, and now this is what my life is like after, and it's so much better. People need to hear that. And that will bring people to a place where they maybe encounter Jesus as well, and their lives are changed. The gospel of Jesus plus nothing is designed to work within relationships. It's designed to work within relationships. People need to hear our story. They need to hear what Jesus has done in our lives. Let's pray.